President Obama comes out with his second budget proposal since February in answer to the House Budget Chair Paul Ryan's Pathway to Prosperity package. What are the fault lines revealed, and whose interests are most advantaged by them? We have assisting me in the opining department, old friend of the show, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host of a most liberal origin. Sir, good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Well, on first blush, what'd you think of the president's speech? Because the Congressional Progressive Caucus, they're not too happy. They want to raise the tax rate to 49-50%.
Well, I was pretty impressed with the speech. I think he went right for the middle of America, which is where the president should go. He's always been a centrist or somewhat barely left of center. So, no, it's not as far left as the progressive position, but I never expected it to be. President Obama is not a left liberal. He's a moderate Democrat. But I thought what he did is he made clear that what the Republicans want is...
By what pharmacological standard are you saying he's a centrist? Dude, you know with whom you're speaking. I'm the only nationally syndicated centrist in the country. I know centrism. Centrism is a friend of mine. Trust me, this guy is no centrist.
Is it a centrist idea to end Medicare? I mean, we've had it since the 60s, and 94% of recipients like it. I don't think that's a centrist idea.
You're assuming facts, not in evidence.
No, that's the Paul Ryan.
No, that's a disconnected narrative. That's a narrative completely disconnected from the facts you purport to explain, and you know that. This is the art of movable standards. You know this is the art of movable standards, wherein you rename a thing as being something other than what it is in order to gain the ground your arguments otherwise could not.
Let's talk about how I define Medicare. I define Medicare as knowing that when you are 65 in America, you will be able to get health care no matter how poor you are, no matter how what pre-existing condition you have. You know that for a reasonable charge that you will be able to get Medicare. It's the thing that 94% of people on Medicare like. That would end as we know it. What Paul Ryan wants to say is if you're poor and you're old...
No. Let me disabuse you. Let me disabuse you because one of us has to speak factually. Now, in the proposal for Medicare, Ryan raises the eligibility age from 65 to 67, and he creates this premium support system in which future retirees would participate in private exchanges, choose their coverage, and have the government contribute about $8,000 a year. Of course, this would be adjusted for inflation. Now, these dollars would go directly to the insurance provider. Additionally, the wealthiest retirees would receive about a third of that amount. So that's a change you might actually like. Effectively, anybody 55 and over today would be untouched by this, leaving only those 54 and younger to be subjected to these changes much later. But you know who actually had good words?
And I want Medicare. And I think most Americans do because it's a very successful program. People know it works. People don't
want to go back to 1920. But the change I just described is denotatively and connotatively thousands of miles away from the description you had hitherto referenced.
Not at all. Here's the heart of Medicare, and I think most Americans would agree, the heart of Medicare is knowing that you can get health care when you're 65. That is what Paul Ryan wants to end. The promise that America has given since the 1960s that when you are 65 years old, you will be able to get health care. He wants to end that. To me, that's ending Medicare as we know it. You disagree?
Completely, because if you're going to make an adjustment to save the thing, versus saying, oh, in the name of not touching it, we're going to let it die, that to me is far more irresponsible.
Well, Barack Obama has a great adjustment to do it, and his idea is instead of cutting poor people and the elderly out of the system, he wants to cut the profits of insurance companies. Now, I know Republicans don't want to cut the profits of insurance companies.
So you agree with the president and his lambasting of Ryan's plan. You agree with the apologists and supporters of the president who also lambasted the Ryan plan, yes?
I think Ryan's plan takes us back to the 1890s America, 1920s, pre-New Deal.
Well, then help me understand this. I had Tony Blankley on earlier, so let me ask you this. Let me run this by you because I asked this of Tony as well. Help me understand this.
Yeah.
Obama and the Democratic leadership generously praise the president's own debt commission, and then that same commission generously praises the Ryan plan. So my question is, how the hell can the administration and its supporters credibly vilify the plan spoken of so highly by the very commission about which the Democrats have spoken so highly as well? Isn't there a serious disconnect here?
No, because the commission...
Because the leaders of the debt commission that Obama put together spoke very, very highly of the Ryan plan.
Well, President Obama praised the Ryan plan. He said, here is a chance for Republicans to put forward their vision for America. I'm glad that they put it forward as a serious plan. I praise the Ryan plan as a serious vision of Republicans have for America. They want to bring us to the 19th
century. Let me tell you what Erskine Bowles said, former chief of staff with Bill Clinton. This is what Erskine Bowles said. along with Alan Simpson, and these two co-chaired the debt commission. We are particularly encouraged that Chairman Ryan's budget looks beyond the recent debates about near-term cuts and recognizes the need to address the long-term drivers of the debt. We're also pleased that the chairman includes a process for Social Security reform in his budget to set the program on sound footing and looks to do so for the program's own sake, not for deficit reduction. This is the other part I love. The budget released by House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan is a serious, honest, straightforward approach to addressing our nation's enormous fiscal challenges. We applaud him for his work in putting forward a proposal which will reduce the country's deficit by approximately the same amount as the plan of the president's fiscal commission. And here's my last one. This is one I really love.
They all reduce the deficit the same amount.
He also said this. Erskine Bowles, no friend to right-wingedness, Erskine Bowles also got behind the following. Chairman Ryan's budget incorporates many of the proposals included in the commission report. But in the areas where he did not support the commission's recommendations, we are happy to see that he has stepped up to the challenge of the Becerra rule adopted by the commission, namely to put forward alternative proposals with equal or greater savings for every provision one turns down. This is not exactly the kind of shop of horrors that you have characterized the plan to be.
Wait. All you said is that Erskine Bowles said that Ryan came up with a plan that's about the same amount as ours. The president also came up with a plan the same amount as ours. I'm sure Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson will praise that plan, too. The question is not how much the deficit is reduced. The question is, where does the money go? Do you believe that billionaires need more money? Do you believe that we should sacrifice our roads and our schools and our children and our elderly so that Warren Buffett gets more money? If you do, you support the Ryan plan.
Again, another disconnected narrative, not having the least infinitesimal correlative relevance to the issue on which you had hitherto so clumsily opined. Oh, my God! Oh, my God, we're in fantasy land! What kind of pharmacological holiday are you on? Let me run this by you. In the Washington Post today, the op-ed section under the headline of "The President Weighs In," they opine, and I'm kidding, this is the Washington Post, one of the biggest supporters of the president. They opine that, quote, while Mr. Obama is correct to call for new taxes, he is wrong to hew to his position that all the necessary revenue can be raised by increasing taxes on the small sliver of households earning more than $250,000 a year. As a matter of math, does the Post have a point with that observation, Mark Levine?
I think that before you ask ordinary Americans to pay more taxes, you need to ask billionaires to pay their fair share. Once you do that, then we can talk about whether
ordinary Americans. Yeah, okay, I'm glad you said that, because let's look at what are the most potent vestiges of debt reduction. Let's take a look at cutting spending versus raising taxes. In my estimation, cutting spending is like a bathtub as a source. But raising taxes is only like a little kitchen sink.
I'll tell you why.
No, I'll tell you why you're wrong. Because we have to remember that in our country, we have 7.8 million millionaires, according to the Spectrum Group. Did you hear me? 7.8 million millionaires and about 403 billionaires. Now, if you were to divest all their wealth, you might make a small dent in the 2011 deficit only, with no impact on subsequent years, which accordingly means there would be zero positive impact on the national debt of $14.3 trillion. Come to think of it, wouldn't that probably make it worse, because you would effectively kill the very job creators you need to generate the additional taxpayers necessary to increase those desperately required revenues. Upon our return, you're going to have a chance to pick up on that. Folks, stick with us. You are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan.